This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
Okay, well, we were talking earlier about what we would discuss, and I thought a good beginning point would be for you to give a little bit background of your interest and first encounters with Marker, and then your continued interest and commitment to what we might call the Marker Project.
All right. Well, thank you. Good evening to all. Thank you. I really want to thank all of those who organized this, but especially Nora, who is a dear friend and also my cousin. But being friends is more important, and who made all this happen. And I'm happy to be here, especially to talk about Chris Marker. But maybe one word only about what we've just seen, because according to Marker, this is not a Marker work we've seen. This was a collective work, unsigned, which wanted to remain unsigned, to which he participated during the months of May and June 1968, which is based on a huge amounts of photographs which were made in the streets of Paris during the riots, and a group of people, the most well-known among them being Chris Marker, Jean-Luc Godard, and Alain René, but also many others with not so much famous names, built this short so-called cinetract by assembling these images unsigned, and which were widely circulated. I remember screening there in my high school at the time, as it was screened in theater, in universities, in factories, on strike, in unions, houses, and all kind of facilities which were related to the movement which was going on at the moment and still going on in the following months, which have been keeping circulating this. So, because this has to do with something which is one element of Marker larger story, which is his important relation toward collective action, toward collective work, and his lack of attention to, let's say, property, including artistic property, which is also has consequences when we will come to have to discuss with what we are trying to do with that, which is what was left behind when he died. This incredible mess, which is also the materiality of, I would call, a genius, but with some difficulties to deal with, as you may imagine. So to answer briefly your question, I happen to have met Chris Marker as a child, because he was a friend of my parents. In the 60s, early 60s, he was editing a film, very important film, called If I Had Four Camels, which is one of the two films he made only based on photographs, the first one being La Jetée, which is probably the most famous film he ever made, but the second, which is also made of only of stills photos, is about traveling and political issues. And then we would meet again on more adult. But he was an impressive guy, I can tell you. When I met him as a kid, he was very, very tall. He was very impressive. He looks a little bit like Nosferatu in Murnau film, and he spoke very strange. He has a blockade in the jaw, in the lower jaw. Okay. So he has a very specific way to talk. We hear him on some films, and he didn't articulate so well. So it was but a very metallic voice. So it was a very He was a character. He's not. It's not easy to have lot of information about what he looked like, because he was extremely reluctant to be photographed and totally reluctant to be filmed, so there is very little visual archive about him. There are photos and stills, but not so many. And then we meet again in the 80s, when I was already working as a film critic, thanks to a common friend who does relate with one of the important dimensions of Chris Marker, which is his absolute love for Japan. It was a Japanese common friend, producer, Kazuko Kawakita, who's passed away since. Since we met from time to time, because very few people had regular connection with Marker. He was meeting a lot of people, but not on a regular basis, and especially men had fewer relation with Marker than women. We would meet in this place, which was at the same time the place where he lives, where he slept, and the place where he worked. And it was a place which was landed for free to him by Costa Gavras and his wife for the last 25 years of Marker's life in the northeast of Paris, Rue Courat. It's pretty well known because there is a famous text by Colin McCabe, one of those who wrote extensively about Chris Marker, which is titled Rue Courat and which is based on his visit to Marker workshop and apartment. This was the state of the place when he passed away in 2012. When you would visit him, you would get either a cup of Russian tea, either a cup of Russian vodka, which was the two things he enjoyed to drink, and have unpredictable and always fascinating discussion. Surrounded by this, one of the things we don't see here, but which was very present, was TV screens, especially in the years of the videotapes. He was recording permanently TV programs from all over the world, especially before the end of Soviet Union. Various Soviet TV channels, not necessarily Russian, but Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan or whatever. And he has been accumulating an incredible amount of everything. Everything means text, images, sounds, datas of all kind. Marker was a lot of things, and it's totally unlikely we can talk about everything, but one of the things he was one of the things he discovered to be, I should say, in the early 50s when he starts to make films, which was not his original project of life, is an editor. He's an editor and he's been doing a lot of editing advising for others beside himself, together with his dear friend with whom he started as a filmmaker, Alain René, who was also an incredible editor, and they both helped many, many filmmakers when they had editing problems in his time. And of course, it has to do with this editing state of mind, that any element can be assembled with another element and build some more significance, some more meaning, some more effect of any kind, altogether idea of knowledge, of beauty, and of political effect, so to speak, because Marker was thinking in political terms always, though he has some evolution, of course, through his life, from the French resistance during the war until the very last, let's say, his last film, The Green of the Cat, which was made in the moment of the rise of the far right in France in 2002. These three dimensions, the political one, the educational one, and the aesthetic one, to call it with these questionable words, are constantly present and reassembling themselves through what looks like mess, what was mess, really for real, but was also his way to bring things together in this kind of process, which was accumulation, but to work. And he was working. One of the characteristics of Marker was he was hardly not sleeping, and he was working. It is nothing else but working. And traveling. He's been, of course, an immense traveler for all his life since mid 40s, because he joins UNESCO already at the end of World War II and travels with UNESCO, and also he joins an association, a French organism called People and Culture and Public Culture, and for People and Culture he would also extensively travel and start to accumulate materials from all over the world.
So when you, after Marker's death in 2012, when was the decision taken? How did you get involved in just what to do with this archive? How to make sense, how to sort of assemble it, reassemble it, disassemble it? A little background on that.
Yeah, well, when he passed away, the first reaction that did happen is that a group of people who were close, or not so close, because being close to Marker is already arguable, but who had a strong personal relation with his work, at least, and often with him somehow, in various ways, including, as I mentioned, several ladies gathered to say, what are we doing with this? And with this and the rest being the films, being the collection of photographies, being the various works he was leaving behind. Sorry, I made something wrong. Is that okay? Is it better? Yeah. And we didn't know, actually, because it was so huge and complex and also emotional, that really we then a few episodes happened. But the important thing is that finally, well, there are heirs, legal heirs, who legally own everything which is left behind him by Marker. But there has been an agreement that Cinémathèque Française will actually take care of everything which he left behind, take care being stored, and put it in a condition to be used by researchers and to be displayed when available. So it was created what his pretentiously called a scientific committee, of which I'm part of, which has to discuss any proposal. Everybody who wants to do something with the Marker heritage has to ask the Cinémathèque, who transfers to the scientific committee, and which discusses, is it a good idea or a bad idea? Is it correct? Is it acceptable that this gallery who wants to display a Marker video installation, or this newspaper who wants to publish text by Marker, or this distributor who wants to release, et cetera, and also to organize his own projects to make visible and accessible Marker's work, the biggest one being this large exhibition we are opening in Cinémathèque in May, and the big significant catalogue with lot of famous and prestigious and very qualified writers, including Nora Alter, which is to be published at the same time, and hopefully to be circulated worldwide afterwards in the coming years, and hopefully a lot of other things. And so we've been discussing this. One of the things we said is none of this can be removed from this place before it has been very precisely designed where it was. Because where it was, this is not obvious on this image, this one is the most general, but when you enter more specific part of it, you see that it always makes sense what is next to what and how it is organized. And this is a map of Chris Marker's brain. And so you just don't want to put everything in boxes and put it in a warehouse like that. You want it to keep a trace of how he did organize it. It looks like a total mess for some reason, but actually this was his order, it was his mental structure, and it helped him to connect. And one of the things, for instance, he did, maybe we can see the slide, is he was stuffing books. He was not writing in books. He was, no, this is not the one. No, this is not the image I want. Not this one. Maybe this one. The books are like this. Each book, they're filled with other documents. He was like augmenting the book with clips from newspaper, photos, letters he received from people, which relate with the book. Of course, it's not like once we found money, but it was very because Marker was really poor and he never cared about money, and he thought he was even poorer than he actually was, because we're trying to say, but you have an account there, you can use some money. No, this is not mine, I don't, and I have no money at all. He wanted to have no money, so to speak. Most crazy and likely project, because we don't want to rebuild the Marker cabinet as a fake imitation of the place with a lot of dust everywhere and worshippers, and this is totally anti-Marker. What we would love to make happen is to have this place online, on a digital version, which could be circulated, and which you can open each of these books and see and read what was actually in it. It's a huge work. We've been talking to Apple or to this kind of huge company, Google, to say they would support such a kind of virtual project. If it happens, because some people have been working on it already with using only a very, very small part as the example, as a prototype. And it makes sense. It definitely makes sense, but it's 10 years' work, and it's very expensive. So I don't know if we see this happen someday, but this would be the ultimate way to keep the access to Marker, what he left behind, acknowledging that even for French Cinematheque, which is used to deal with large collections which are being given to it or which have been to which they are given access after the death of major filmmakers or cinema people, but this is not by far only about cinema. Cinema is only, Chris Marker is maybe first a writer, and all his life a writer. He's a filmmaker, he's a photographer with an immense collection of photos, and there are thousands and thousands of negatives. Most of them were never turned into positive prints. Plus, of course, the existing photos he did. He was a musician, a composer. He was a visual artist at large, and he made several very important video installation. He was a geek, and he was crazy about computers. Since the beginning, he was programming the very first Apple in the late 70s and early 80s, and he was programming, he was inventing devices, speaking with computer guys in the US. He was absolutely fluent in English. He has been a translator for the American Army in 1945, and he was really at ease in English, including technical word and everything. He, one of the worst or best field to investigate, which has almost not been done already now, are the hard drives of his computers, which are like Amazonia. You get lost in it for...
How many were there?
As far as I know, there are 5 very big ones. But inside is a... Because there are thousands and thousands of files and subfiles and sub-subfiles in the hard drive, with names that never tell the truth about what is inside. It's coded definition of the content, and it's sometimes when after work I go in one of the hard drives and I try to travel just for fun. It's like, you know, navigating a network of strange rivers, and you enter, you open things, and you see images, because he was many are his own, but most of it is not his own. It's something, things he were collecting all over the place. There is, in the computers, there is, well, it's meaningless to say the world literature, but hundreds and hundreds of the most important literature works of the whole world in various languages, and as well as paintings, this editing mind, which also comes from a kind of Renaissance spirit to a certain extent, to what was 17th century European spirit of the utopia of knowing everything. The possibility to know everything, which was not possible even at the time, but there was this skyline of being the what was called un homme in this sense, who would the encyclopedic man, so to speak, which, and he had really this trend, this impulse. So all of this is there, and it was funny because we've been working, because this scientific committee is partly composed with Cinematheque people from the various departments, film department, paper documents department, photo department, video, computers, etc., and partly from some experts. And one of the very interesting things is that those people from the Cinematheque, they've been speaking together like they never did before, because usually they are in separate offices and they are dealing with separate, but they're saying, oh, now we have to speak together, this is the first time, and this is typically a Markarian effect, right? to build this kind of bridges and this kind of circulation. And it's absolutely, just please believe me, it's absolutely fascinating. It is funny, immensely, and being the fun, the humor, the wit is in main device for Marker always, and it's a pleasure to deal with this. And at the same time, of course, it deals with war. It deals with the worst aspect of capitalism and colonialism and bureaucratism and Stalinism and all of this. So it has all these various, very serious and not so funny dimension at the same time, but through this very vivid and alive relation, for which the travel is a very important resource for him.
This is, since you mentioned going into the hard drives, but I was also wondering, so in a way, you've described a little bit about conserving the material aspects of his production, it being papers or films or videos or whatever, photographs, negatives. What about his internet, his more virtual projects, such as Ouvrage or Kaczynski's channel or some of his Second
it's
Life?
It's part of it.
Is that being maintained so that people can go and still and visit? Or
I assume it will be, though it hasn't been decided. Because one of the things he did, I don't know if you're all aware of it, is he created his own space on Second Life, which was his museum, so to speak, where it was a permanent exhibition of some of his work. Of course, by far none of it, all of it is there, but a kind of overview of different things he's been doing, which was accessible online on Second Life, and you would circulate with your own avatar, and potentially you might meet Chris Marker as his own avatar, who was called Sergei Murasaki, and speak with him as in the way we are. Second Life still exists, though it's nothing really active now in the recent years. It has been active at the moment, and he has been but to keep this place needs to pay. It's a rented space, even if it's virtual space, so there is a need to find the funding to keep it alive so it can be visited, because it's accessible because the Marker, there is the Second Life space, which is called Ouvroir. Ouvroir refers to a French word, which is something old world for where ladies would meet, usually to knit, but which has been used by a group of French literature and science in the late 50s, called Ouvroir de littérature potentielle, the most famous one being Raymond Queneau, and it refers more to this ouvroir as an experimental place, experimental gathering place and research place. And then Chris Marker made a short film, not that short, 40 minutes, I think, visit of this space, which is accessible online on the last website he created called Gorgomancy, which anyone can access, where he did put a lot of his work on a common access, including Ouvroir the movie, which is a visit of Ouvroir the space. So I cannot say for sure that Ouvroir the space will remain, but at least Ouvroir the movie will remain. It's a movie. It's a video product. Hopefully we'll try. It's not that expensive, but it takes someone to pay, because for the moment is for a long time a very dedicated person. We thank a lot Laurence Bronberger. She's a producer and the daughter of famous French producer Pierre Bronberger, has been paying every 6 months to keep it alive, but she says my company cannot afford to keep paying it, so if somebody can take over for this. And then there are other online projects or accomplishments by Chris Marker, like this this small TV channel he created. But I think he was more interested in the internet as a resource, mm-hmm, than he, in a display space. He would send things using the internet. Friends or those who are related, we did receive loads of drawings. He was drawing extensively. This is among his multifaceted practices. Using, as I'm sure you know, the cat Guillaume en Egypte, the cartoon cat with orange color, who is based on a real cat. Who was the cat? He lived with it for a long time. Who was called Guillaume en Egypte, as a stand-in for himself, because he would not appear himself, so the cat would stand for himself, and commenting what was happening in the world, political events, or sometimes artistic events, or sometimes common days, things that had come to his mind, or something he's read or seen, or whatever, or making jokes. It was always with a kind of humor. He did this for an online magazine organized by some well-known French, well-known graphist people known as Bazooka Group, who had this online newspaper for several years. And he contributed on a regular basis through Guillaume drawings and commenting what was happening, especially one of his main topics was American politics. He was very concerned with American politics. He would come often to the US. He had been related with the Black Panther movement in those years, and he worshipped Obama. He campaigned for the election of Obama. He printed T-shirts, mm-hmm, he was selling himself in the streets to support Obama campaign, the first one at least. For him, it was really a dream that Black man would become president of the United States, and it was very deep and emotional for him, and it was impossible to even discuss afterwards Obama politics with him. But also the French politics or the world politics as well. But you would also use the internet. For instance, there is one very interesting, among the very last thing he did. This is also on Gorgomancy website. Mm-hmm. Everybody can see it, access to it, which is called Short Stop in Dubai, which is made, it is a fiction film about the real assassination of a PLO leader by Israeli agents, which happened in a hotel in Dubai, only based on survey cameras, control cameras. He grabbed the image on the internet from these cameras, and he reconstructed what really happened in the airport and in the hotel where the killing happened through this. So he was like traveling to elaborate different kinds of, I don't know how you would call this, political, artistic, technical, etc. Object. This is short. These are short, mm-hmm, objects he did in the end. In the end, he was doing only short things, but with the use of this technicity in various ways, as much as very, very classical technique, but he was always interested in the new devices, the new, especially the new virtual objects or digital objects. Yes.
So,
How much can you tell us about the exhibit? The upcoming exhibit.
I can show you the map of the exhibit. Yeah. This was
and
the,
just
the other
decisions
image.
You made as yeah. to yeah. what to install or what to okay. exhibit and show.
Can we show the map? Yes. Yeah. So when we were asked to design, to conceive the exhibition by Cinémathèque, the three of us, Christine Vanache has been the curator at Centre Pompidou Museum for 30 years of the video department of the museum. She is the only museum person of the three of us, because the two others are, Ramon Bellour is a theoretician and academic, and I'm a film critic and a fake academic. And Christine Vanache, in her position in Centre Pompidou, was the one who produced, so to speak, two of Marker's major work. One is called In Memory. It was, in those days, a format which doesn't really exist anymore, which is called DVD-ROM, and which is its circulation device on a CD or DVD, but which is now also on this website, Borgomansi. You can okay. circulate In Memory, and which was his memory, actually, what the things, objects, works, persons, documents, which were meaningful to him, and inside which you could circulate randomly, or according to different trails he would propose inside him, he being, of course, Guillaume en Égypte, the cat. And the other Christine did commission for Centre Pompidou is a major video installation called Zapping Zone, proposal for an imaginary television, which is composed of 24 TV screens, old TV sets, on which are can be seen 24 different programs, building a kind of a meta program by the assembly of these 24 programs. And we first thought to use In Memory as a pattern to build the exhibition, which means basically, don't look at the map because this is not what's happening really, but I think it's interesting to mention. It's a like a star structure with a center and I don't
spokes.
Know what you say. Yeah. With the in-memory object, which opens access to various directions. It was very productive, spatially, intellectually, everything, but it was considered by the Cinémathèque Française, which is our boss, too complex and too difficult for those who don't know about Chris Marker, because Chris Marker is much, well, he's not the only one, but to an extreme level, somebody who is incredibly well known by those who know about him. There are a lot of people who are passionate with Marker, who know a lot, who are involved. It's very important in their life, whatever they do. And of course, many of them are artists or filmmakers, or and totally unknown by the rest of the world. There is a border. The border is very solid, and including very articulate person. I say, I'm working on Chris Marker exhibition. I say, who? I say, yeah, well, you know, Chris Marker. Well, you know, La Jetée. Yeah, rings vaguely a bell. And that's it. So, of course, this memory structure was demanding a kind of acceptance of the Marker way of thinking, which was considered, right or wrong, too demanding for a larger audience than the Marker connoisseur and who would be friend. So we tried to put together a more classical spatial display, which is mostly based on a chronological organization. There, it does accept, and not only accept, but propose certain distortion in the chronology, which is kind of appropriate for somebody who was, for whom time traveling and changing right. inside time was a major reference, as La Jetée, but not only La Jetée, the past of the future and many other of his work also refer to this in various ways. So to explain very shortly, we enter from here, these are the stairways and the lifts, and here we enter by the end, the circle, which is the Louvre-Loire, the visit of Second Life
right.
plays by Marker, which means at the same time we have an overview of his work, because we see his photos, even older ones, we see images and works and everything. And at the same time, we relate with one of the most contemporary kind of works, being online in a digital world, in a virtual world, and online. And then the visitor enters the pre-war, during the war, and just after the war, place where there are a lot of unknown and untold stories about Marker youth and what he did during the war. I've been investigating, including in the archive on Swiss justice and different areas where we found a lot of unknown things. And the main activities he had during the late 40s and very early 50s, which has to do basically with this group, Public Culture, where he did relate with, one of the founders of Public Culture was André Bazin, and he was very close to Bazin at this time. And one of the things he would do after having been at war against the Germans was to go to Germany a lot for reconciliation, using culture and especially theater, stage theater and cinema, cine clubs, to organize a huge amount of meetings mm-hmm. with German people. And also he was the editor of the magazine of Public Culture in French and in German. At this time, as well as already traveling a lot, then he would direct his first film at this time, which is commissioned by Public Culture, which he would film in 1952 during the Olympic Games in Helsinki, which is called Olympia 52, which is his debut as a filmmaker. And then we enter the space which is dedicated to his first very important film, which he co-directed with Alain René, Statues Also Died, which is dedicated to African sculpture and artwork at large, but also is a very strong anti-colonialist pamphlet because of what it was forbidden and banned by French government for more than a decade, and which is also to the relation of Chris Marker with the museum mm-hmm. itself as a place, because of course part of what we see in Statue Also Dies is shot in several museums, Paris and London, where there are African works of art, which connects to his relation with objects of art. He was friend with several important artists of his time. And also he has, I forget to mention, because it will relate, he was also, when he was a member of Public Culture, he was also a writer in one of the most important intellectual magazine, or not magazine, journals, reviews, post-war, called Esprit, where he would write about politics, about cinema. Well, it's 75 pieces you would write between 1946 and 1952, with already the incredibly vast diversity of topics and the knowledge, the incredibly knowledgeable, the humor as well. The style is there in the writing, in this journal there. Then the space afterwards is dedicated. Should I keep the visit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Depiction of the visit. So the next space is dedicated to him as a traveler and as a publisher altogether, because he would start to travel a lot and to make films about travel in China, in Siberia, in Korea. No, not film, but traveling North Korea, then Israel and Cuba and Japan. And at the same time, he would create a collection of books as a publisher, as an editor, dedicated to tourism. Each of these books, the collection is called Petit Planet, Small Planet. Each book dedicated to one country, which is really reinventing tourism guide at the moment, and it was very important for him. He has been working as a graphist and layout designer as well as editor, very creatively also on this level. And in North Korea, he made not a film but a book called Korean, which he called a short movie. On the book, which is mostly made of photos, because he's also acting as a photographer at the same time. So it relates with this relation both to traveling and to displaying the result of his travel. The books he published, he edited Petit Planet. He's not the writer of the books. He's been writing several books, one novel, very early, 1947. I never know the English title of the novel. The Forthright Spirit. Yeah, and a essay about. Keep my head. Very important.
Giraudoux.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you. About Giraudoux, who was a very important writer and playwright for him, also published in those years. And then there is this place which is dedicated to the screening of the square in the middle. It is a theater to screen La Jetée as a turning point in his life. And next to it, a space dedicated to Le Joli Mai, which is the first documentary he would make in Paris, in France, exactly at the same time. Actually, he has been shooting Le Joli Mai in May, and he's been making the still photos, which are the material of La Jetée, in the summer of the same year, 1962. These two projects are really intertwined. Which is not true, the only fiction work by Chris Marker, La Jetée, and the other is a more locally rooted documentary he would make, where we hear Marker's voice saying Giraudoux's words, the prayer on the Eiffel Tower at the opening, which leads to this vast space which is related with the 60s and very early 70s years, which are mostly political years, more openly political years, starting with two things, very important things he does in 1967. One of them is initiating and coordinating the collective film Far From Vietnam, which assembles work by huge amounts of people about supporting the Vietnam War on the side of the Vietnamese, of course, also questioning the relation to me. This is the title also of the, and in this film, for those who know it, the part by Jean-Luc Godard and Alain René are even more discussing how do we relate with this kind of situation from where we stand, and then actually talking about what's happening in Vietnam. And the other thing is joining in the autumn of 67 a factory on strike, well, which has been on strike and which was about to go on strike again in the east of France, in Besançon, where he starts to make a film about the fight of the workers, an important film called A Demain, A Bientôt J'espère. Does it have an English title?
Be Seeing You.
Be Seeing You, yes. which he would screen to the workers in the factory. Also, it's a collective work, and a lot of people are helping and taking part in this, it's a process, and which will be not so well received by the workers, who would say, but this is not us, this is your vision, but we... Well, some of them would say, actually, the film was quite well received, but some people would say, and he would say, okay, you should make your films yourself. So, such initiating what is known as Group Medvedkin, which was those group of workers which are trained by people, including Marker and many other, and Jean-Luc Godard, and also technicians, photographs, DOPs, sound people, editors who would go to there and help them learn to use the tools and make their own films with Group Medvedkin, then there would be another Group Medvedkin in another factory in Sochaux, in Besançon. So this is documenting everything. And then the May 68 moment where Marker doesn't work under his own name. He melts himself in the collective process at this time. For instance, with the things we've seen before, Cinetrack, but he does a lot of photos, and we found in his place extensive amount of unknown photos of May 68, besides those which are already well known. Some of them have been exhibited worldwide and everything. Plus various activist work, which are being talked about, organizing people, helping people to make things, supporting what's in the coming years, what's going on in Chile with the Allende experiment, and mostly supporting Chilean filmmakers, Miguel Littin and Patricio Guzman, for their own films, helping Eldridge Cleaver, who is in exile in Algeria, but who's going to Congo. And they have been given, Eldridge and Kathleen Creever has been given one of the first used in this context video camera, which they used to shoot a film. Well, they're not those. There is a guy, I forgot his name, has also former Black Panther, who is exiled in Paris, who joined them for the travel, and he's a photographer and he's using them. Sorry?
But
No. He's not a famous Black Panther. He's a guy. I have the name somewhere in there. Fitzpatrick, or a name like that. But they bring back the footage, but they don't know how to deal with it because there is no editing device for video at the time. And they bring it to Chris Marker and say, "You're editor. Do something out of that." And he kind of discover editing of video with the material, this rough material filmed in Congo at the time, with a lot of comas, Marxist-Leninist Congo, which is an existing film, though hardly seen, called Congo Oye. Hello, Congo. which was actually found back recently. And among many things he does, another thing he would do later in the 70s is helping to build a film school in Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde after the victory of the guerrilla independence war against the Portuguese colonial army. And he spends a certain amount of time, plus he organizes from Paris the sending of material and one of someone he's been working a lot with, Anita Perez. She's an editor. She's been there for a long time, also dealing with this young people who wants to become filmmaker in the newly independent area of Guinea. This is where he's shooting some of the images we shall see later in the Sunless, of course. And at the same time, he's starting to work in the mid-70s on what will become a Green Without a Cat, Le Fond de l'Air Rouge, which is at the same, which is completed in 1977 as an overview of the last 15 years of uprisings and political fights, but also as the revolutionary ideals of the 20th century at large, because it starts with Battleship Potemkin and the Russian Revolution, and it goes through the 20th century as a revolutionary project, and how to acknowledge its failures without dismissing the hopes it was related to, or the need to fight against injustice whatsoever, even if apparently everything that was expected to happen during the previous decade did not happen. So we are screening the whole film, which is now the final editing of the film by Chris Marker. It's 3 hours long. He has been re-editing several times until the early 2000s in the square place. It has been discussed a lot. People were saying nobody's going to watch a 3 hours film in a museum, but there has been a Chris Marker exhibition in Whitechapel in London 2-3 years ago, and they were screening the whole film, and they had put just mattress cushions. And cushions and it was on a loose. It was not a real screen, it was like something. And people were fascinated. I'm not saying they were watching the whole thing, but the film is okay even if you don't watch the whole thing. Of course, it makes sense to watch it and even to watch it again several times because it's an incredibly rich film. But and we were surprised that all the friends which did visit this exhibition, as I did, we could see these young people who didn't know, because Marker was not at all well known in Great Britain, and they were discovering the whole exhibition, and they were lying for long time, whatever the long time is, and I really felt it was meaningful to offer this for those who would accept, those who would not will move, whatever, but it makes sense. And then the last big space, which is the most complex one, though there is the installation of a zapping zone here. There is all the works. I can depict each of these colored spots you can see, but it has to do with the complexity of the things he did during the. Well, it starts, of course, it starts with Sunless at the beginning of the 80s as the kind of shift, but continuity with very different means of the same project, because he's coherent, but acknowledging the times have changed and entering in the globalized and digitalized world, more or less with 10 years before everybody knows this is happening, which is exactly what Sunless is about. And then he would still be involved in some political, immediate political reaction, like what happened in with the Sarajevo siege, and he would be there. We would meet again, me and him, in Sarajevo during the siege, because he was there, and he was part of the group I was part of who organized bringing cultural devices to people under siege, and he was it was very for me moving. The two main cinema guys who did immediately understand what was happening in Sarajevo was Jean-Luc Godard and Chris Marker. Mm. And they went there, both of them, and they helped and they supported financially. Godard, Marker had no money, but he gave works, he helped people, he
set up,
circulated, he gave connections to whatever. He did everything he can, and he went when there were shooting there.